Hello, and thank you for joining us, and welcome to ICANN's new GTLD applicant update webinar. Before we get started, I'd like to go over a few housekeeping items. This webinar is being recorded, and the recording and supporting materials from the webinar will be published on the new GTLD microsite. The running time will be approximately 90 minutes. Christine Willett, Vice President, GTLD Operations, will start with a presentation, which will then be followed by an opportunity for questions and answers. In order to accommodate our global audience, participants are encouraged to submit questions in advance via the email address posted on the webinar page. These questions will be given priority, followed by questions submitted in the Adobe Connect Q&A pod, and then we'll go to the phone lines, answering as many questions as time permits. To ask a question via the AT&T teleconference phone bridge, locate the dial-in numbers on the GTLD microsite under webinars. To enter the phone queue to ask a question, dial star 1. If you change your mind and would like to exit the queue, dial star 2. Finally, I'd like to remind you to mute your phones and computer speakers as I turn you over to Christine.
Thank you, Haley. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. This is Christine Willett from ICANN. Thank you for joining us today for the new GTLD applicant webinar for August. We have a number of topics we're going to be covering today. I'll start with some of the topics that we anticipate and expect are top of mind for the community. We're going to talk about the name collision paper that was published this week, as well as the Dockless Domains paper. We'll give a brief update on GAC advice. Then we will provide a usual update on application processing and where we stand. We'll segue into rights protection mechanisms, give a little more information, expand on what we discussed in Durban about contention resolution. We'll be reviewing an updated timeline, that earliest past timeline we've been discussing for a few months now, and then we will open it up to Q&A. So I'm anticipating that we will have about 30 minutes of presentation, and then we will segue into the questions. Okay. So to start, as many of you are aware, I'm sure, ICANN published a study which was conducted by InterIsle this week on the 5th of August. It was based on a review of string collisions and discussed the impact of these name collisions in the DNS. ICANN, in addition to the InterIsle paper, ICANN also published our own paper for public comment, which discusses a way forward, a way to proceed for the program. And we've classified the strings applied for into three categories, into three profiles. 80% of the strings applied for strings under the new GTLD program fall into a category of low risk, while 20% of the strings, 279 of the applied for strings, require further study, and two strings in particular, .corp and .home, have been classified as high risk and high impact. So we have published this paper and opened it up for a public comment to discuss the approach we are suggesting for proceeding with the delegation of these strings. The approach we're suggesting is for low-impact strings, the 80% category, to allow those strings to proceed to delegation with minimal new requirements and changes to the delegation timeline. Granted, there are a couple of prerequisites that we are adding to that. Then the 20% category with the unclassified, uncalculated risk that we're suggesting require further study to determine potential risk levels and to identify the appropriate mitigation steps. So this would be likely a 3 to 6 month study to make this determination. And then we've identified the high risk category with .corp and .home, which we anticipate will require significant mitigation. So we are asking and encouraging the community to review the study by InterIsle, to review the staff proposal on a way forward and to submit your feedback via the public comment form. We opened that up on August 5th here, but it's a 42-day public comment period. So we look forward to getting everyone's opinions on that. Moving on to another study and paper, this one on dotless domains. Dotless domain names. Carve Systems provided us a study. They were engaged by ICANN to produce a study on dotless domains, and we published that paper as well this week. That paper assesses the potential security and stability impacts of dotless domain names, and consistent with the ESSEC and IAB, Carve found multiple risks that would require mitigation. So staff is preparing, working with NGPC, and the NGPC will be considering this issue at their next meeting on the 13th of August. Moving on to the next topic, I know many of us were in Durban last month, and in Durban, the GAC issued a new communique. ICANN published that on August 1st. That communique had updated advice on a number of specific strings. Applicants have the opportunity to respond to the ICANN board in regards to this advice and provide the new GTLD program committee with more information for consideration of this advice. As we had did after the Beijing communique, we've posted that, and we are accepting the applicant feedback via the new GTLD customer service team, and we will be gathering and collecting that to present to the new GTLD program committee. The new GTLD program committee, NGPC, has a meeting scheduled on the 13th of August to consider GAC advice, among other things on their agenda. That agenda is published via that link there. So much activity moving forward. The NGPC continues to work with the GAC and is seeking to dialogue with them as a result of those meetings in Durban. With that, we will move on to application processing. So these are our current, as of today, the updated statistics for the program. As you all know, I'm sure, we started with 1,930 applications. 106 of those applications have been withdrawn to date. We currently have 1,821 applications, with 3 applications not approved. As of last Friday, we have posted initial evaluation results through priority number 1,500, and we have initiated, as of today, 164 contracting information requests. This drilled down into those 1,500 initial evaluation statuses of the applications through priority 1,500. You can see here 1,377 of those have passed initial evaluation, 14 are identified as eligible for extended evaluation, 66 of those first 1,500 have withdrawn, 40 are on hold, again, as I've mentioned previously, on hold for reasons of change requests, additional review by panels, et cetera. Then, finally, the 3 not approved applications. Happy to announce that we have initiated the extended evaluation phase of the program. Applicants who are eligible for extended evaluation will have at least 15 calendar days to elect extended evaluation after their IE results are posted. We are now accepting those elections. The election notification has been sent to the 14 applications who are eligible. That was sent on the 26th of July, and as of today, 7 applications have elected to proceed with extended evaluation. We're going to continue to send out those eligibility notifications on a regular basis as IE results are published. And we're working to get our microsite updated to reflect this EE election status to identify that the applications are in extended evaluation. We anticipate having that ready by next week, the 12th of August. For extended evaluation, we have re-engaged all of the initial evaluation firms for those same panels that have an extended evaluation component. In particular, for our financial and technical panels, Ernst & Young, KPMG, and JAF Global Advisors will continue to proceed with their BIN and tech evaluation work. InterIO is our panel firm providing registry services work, and we continue to utilize EIU, the Economist Intelligence Unit, and Interconnect Communications to complete the geographic names evaluation. I want to make it clear that extended evaluation utilizes the exact same evaluation criteria that we used during initial evaluation. So we are not changing the criteria. We are not changing the scoring methodology. It allows a more extensive review and is intended to be more interactive to give applicants the opportunity to better understand the requirements and any mitigation that is required, and to provide the information that the panels need. However, we, as I said already, we will be using the exact same criteria as we have in initial evaluation. Moving on to another key element of the program, objections and dispute resolution. This has been an active area in the last several weeks. We started with a total of, I want to say, 262 objections. And you can see here the breakdown of those objections into their four categories: joint confusion, legal rights, limited public interest, and community objections. Although the majority of applications are still in progress with the dispute resolution service providers and the expert panels, we have started in recent weeks to see the resolution results of some of these objections. Under legal rights objections, you see that 29 of those situations, the applicant has prevailed, one objection where the objector prevailed, with four terminated and 35 in progress. So this information is available through each of the DRSP public websites, but we are continuing to work to summarize this for you to provide you this overall look at the objection process. Contracting. As you know, we began our contracting, signed contracts in Durban. We actually initiated the contracting information requests, sending those requests out to applicants and inviting them to participate in contracting as of the 3rd of July. To date, as of today, this evening, applications through priority number 300 have received notifications, and that includes 164 applications of the first 300 have been invited to contracting. We received a total of 12 responses to date, the four applicants that are now contracted, as well as eight additional responses that our team continues to process. We are working diligently on a process we call COI Outreach, the Continuing Operations Instrument, or Letter of Credit. The letter of credit, letters of credit submitted by applicants in all cases were not going to be satisfactory for contracting, so we're working diligently to get ahead and inform the applicants of any shortcomings or any changes necessary to their letters of credit, COIs, before contracting is initiated with them. So you see the release schedule ahead here. By August 9th, which is this Friday, we expect to have the COI outreach up to through priority number 500. Next Wednesday, we will issue CIRs through priority number 400. And then by the following Friday, we are looking to do CIR outreach through number 700. So I know we got several questions in advance of this webinar. We accepted questions about the pace at which we are issuing the CIRs. And by this pace, you can see that we are issuing CIRs at a rate of through 100 priority numbers per week. And we are doing the COI outreach at a pace of 200 per week. That is not necessarily the pace that we will continue. However, in an effort to fill our pipeline and make sure that we are moving as many applicants forward through the contracting process, we will continue this pace for as long as we can and as long as is necessary. Moving on to change requests. We have received far more change requests over the course of the program than I think anyone ever anticipated. And as I reiterate on every webinar and most meetings, as per the AGB, any time information in an application becomes untrue or inaccurate, the applicant is expected to notify and must notify ICANN of this change via the change request process. To date, and we continue to indicate that all approved change requests will be posted for a 30-day application comment period. Going forward, the 30-day comment period for the application will not impede an application from moving forward and receiving a CIR. So applications which have an approved change request, not a pending change request, but a change request that has gone through the ICANN approval process and which is posted, will be able to receive their contracting information requests. However, applications that have that change request will not be eligible for signature or execution until the 30-day comment period completes and ICANN evaluates and reviews any comments which have been submitted. So we think that this is going to be an improvement and is going to facilitate the overall process flow for applications towards contracting. I do want to be clear, however, that applications that have a pending change request, meaning that that change request has not been approved by ICANN yet, will not be receiving a CIR, that the change request will need to be approved and posted for the 30-day comment period in order to move forward with the contracting process. Pre-delegation testing. Happy to report that for the last 2 weeks we have started production pre-delegation testing, and that's underway. We have four contracted parties, it's probably no surprise that we have four PDT appointments in progress. The pre-delegation testing specifications were updated after the Durban meeting on the 25th of July. We got some great feedback during the Durban meeting, which we incorporated, and we published the updated documents as well as the red lines to the June version of the specs. So those documents are all out on the PDT page of the microsite. Once applicants are contracted, once their contract is executed, as with these four, they will be invited to participate in pre-delegation testing. We are doing this on a weekly basis. We've just talked about this before, how we have a weekly cycle. Applicants who complete contracting in 1 week will be invited to schedule pre-delegation testing in the subsequent week. I do want to report that pre-delegation beta testing has completed. We conducted a total of 45 beta tests. with a total of 24 registry service providers. In general, the beta test results definitely improved from the beginning of the beta test period in the May time frame throughout the beta test period as we ended and wrapped up in July. For the latest information, please see the PDT page of the microsite. In terms of rights protection, Trademark Clearinghouse, timeline is very much the same as what I presented in Durban. We did post the RPM requirements document this week on the 6th of August, and that is out for public comment. We expect to finalize, get all those public comments and finalize that document in October. Our Uniform Rapid Suspension Service, just a quick update, we've talked about this several times before. Our providers are operationally ready. We had NAS ready as of July. ADMDRC, we are looking towards a September readiness date, operational readiness. We were fortunate to have a demo provided in Durban of the URS, and we've been working in the last few weeks with the registries and registrars to define the technical specifications about how they work with the URS providers. So a proposed document was sent to the tech mailing list the 8th of July, and I believe that there was a discussion held earlier today on this topic. So we're looking to finalize the requirements and document and post that shortly, and move forward with our operational readiness on our URS. Post-delegation dispute resolution processes. So we have three of those. First, the registry restrictions, and we don't have enough acronyms here, so it's the RRDRP. We announced on the 2nd of August NAF Forum as the provider, and we are working to develop the specific registry restriction DRP rules with that provider. Similarly, for the trademark post-delegation dispute resolution, we announced two providers on the 2nd of August, ADMDRC, as well as NAF Forum, and we are also working on developing the dispute resolution rules with those providers. The public interest commitments DRP is in a slightly different state. On the 2nd of August, the PICDRP flowchart was distributed and shared with the negotiating team, the group who are working to finalize, draft to finalize that language. We expect to discuss that flowchart with the negotiating team and then from there draft the final PICDRP language. New topic, contention resolution. We previewed some information on this in Durban, but we have a few more details to share with you today. As of today, we have 216 active contention sets. 13 of those include one or more community applicants, which would be eligible for proceeding to community priority evaluation. We have 184 contention sets which do not include community applicants, which are eligible for auction, would be moving towards auction eligibility. So as per the guidebook, the string contention resolution mechanisms, namely CPE and auctions, those mechanisms are intended to proceed once contention sets are finalized. And we haven't talked about this a great deal, but contention sets are finalized once the string confusion objections are resolved. So we have preliminary contention sets, but those are subject to change pending the outcome of the string confusion objections. So once we have finalized contention sets, then applicants would be we'd be eligible to proceed with our dispute string contention resolution mechanism. In order to be eligible for CPE, community priority evaluation, an individual community applicant, in addition to the contention set being finalized, the individual community applicant would have needed to pass evaluation, either initial evaluation or extended evaluation. They would have to have no unresolved objections, and they would have to have no GAC advice pending. So that's the baseline criteria to be able to begin CPE. Similarly, in order for the entire contention set to move towards auction, again, the contention set must be finalized. Then all applicants in the contention set must have passed evaluation. They must have no unresolved objections among all applications in the contention set. None of the applications may have GAC advice pending. And none of the applicants are in the process of CPE. So I say concluded, but I think that I probably should change that word to commenced or currently participating in CPE. So when I say that, I anticipate that I'm going to get a few questions on this, so let me see if I can address some questions. Finalizing the contention sets, three string confusion objections, we expect that there are some of these 216 active contention sets that today are not affected by any of the string confusion objections. And our expectation is to be able to move those unaffected contention sets forward through the two mechanisms, CPE and the auctions, as those contention sets are determined to be final and unaffected by the string confusion objections. Let me continue, and we'll talk a little bit about CPE specifically. In Durban, I had committed to get a document out this week. Unfortunately, we are continuing to work with the panel to finalize the CPE guidelines. We are expecting that those guidelines will be finalized, drafted for posting and feedback next week. We're looking to get that feedback by the end of August, turn those around, and publish a document in early September. And then right now our target date is the 9th of September to send out the eligibility notifications for CPE. Again, these would be going to community members who are part of a finalized contention set. So we are working on that, and we expect to be publishing more information on these contention sets and the status of the contention sets in the coming weeks. So then we would expect to begin the first set of evaluations. Once the CPE is elected, applicants will have 3 weeks to elect, submit their deposits, and then we would begin evaluations in October. For the auction timeline, we still have a bit of work to do on auction provider readiness. This is the exact same timeline we discussed in Durban. We expect to publish documentation in early September, user documentation. We'll have training and mock auctions in October, and by mid-October we expect to be ready to proceed with our first set of auctions. I was asked a question in Durban about an auction of last resort and exactly when would all of the members of a contention set be required to move towards auction. So, again, I go back to that criteria I described, that the contention set must be finalized, and then all of the applicants in the contention set must meet the eligibility criteria we discussed. Once that occurs, we will notify applicants that the string contention set is, and all the members are eligible to move to auction. So We would be sending out auction notifications to the eligible applicants once the contingent sets are finalized. Right now, we are targeting mid-September. We anticipate that the first auction would be held within 30 days of that notification. As per the AGB, applicants may request a one-time extension to the auction timeline, and ICANN would consider that request. Within those 30 days, ICANN will proceed to inform applicants of the formal intent to auction and include a specific auction date, at which point applicants would be triggered to submit their auction deposits. So many more details around the rules will be published, as I described, in the coming weeks about the nuances and the exact timing of auction. But I know we have lots of questions, and I wanted to address this question about the timeline of auction for last resort. And finally, before we get to Q&A, I wanted to talk about the timeline for the program. So what I'm sharing today is the earliest path timeline to the first new GTLD. Again, it's hypothetical, lots of caveats. Again, there's still lots of moving pieces and parts here that might affect this overall timeline. So as you can see, we have the first contract. We know that was signed on the 13th of July. Based on the name collision study, which was conducted and published, the two gray bars reflect the proposed periods for the low-risk strains in that study, namely a 120-day wait period from contract signing until the first name activation occurs. And that's the first gray bar, and the second gray bar being 30 days after delegation, in which notification to the query submitters would commence. So you can see that leads us to a sunrise period happening in late October to late November, and that 120-day period in this earliest case situation has name activation in the middle of the sunrise period. Otherwise, these dates reflect our expectations today based on current pre-delegation testing schedule, our current transition to IANA, delegation, etc. Vis-a-vis the previous version of this, we've also added the September 25th date for the final RPM documents to be published. So that would be after the 42-day public comment period is done and we finalize those documents. So we'd also be looking at the 25th of September for the first new TLD to be delegated. So that is it for my presentation. I'm sure we have a number of questions. As we mentioned at the beginning of the webinar, we're going to start with the questions. We did something different this month. We asked for questions in advance. And we're going to start by addressing some of those questions that were provided in advance. And then we will be moving to questions that came to the pod. Again, trying to address some of the requests that you've made to alternate in different formats between the phone questions and the participants who are able to participate via Adobe. So I will turn it over to my team as we get prepared to answer these questions. Thank you.
This is Trang. I will be reading the first question that was submitted to us prior to the webinar. The question comes from Ashley Roberts. If two applicants in a contention set have both passed IE, can they delay the mandatory ICANN auction if they both wish to and are negotiating in good faith? Is there a final deadline imposed by ICANN for applicants to move to an ICANN auction?
So, as I mentioned, once the contention set is finalized and all applicants are eligible, you'd receive the notification, and then the auction is anticipated to be scheduled within 30 days. As for the AGB applicants, if all parties in the contention set agree and wish to request ICANN to extend that, I believe the AGB allows for a possible 90-day extension if to be requested.
Thanks, Christine. Next question also comes from Ashley Roberts. Can you please provide more guidance as to what an applicant should list in Exhibit 8 of the registry agreement? Would ICANN pre-populate Exhibit A when they send an applicant the registry agreement after completion of the CIR process?
So this is Christine. To answer Ashley's question, Krista Papik is here. I'm going to ask Krista to direct answer this one, if you don't mind, Krista.
Sure. Thank you, Christine. This is Krista Papik. So Exhibit A should contain those registry services that the applicant specified in their application to ICANN, which has been approved by the evaluation panels. The ICANN will provide a Exhibit A to the applicant. Sorry, let me take a step back. Once you go through the CIR process, you submit your response. When ICANN responds to you with a contract, we will include a draft of Exhibit A in those registry services for you to review. So there's not much really for the applicant to do other than to review the services as we've designed them based on what you put in your application.
Thanks, Krista. Next question also comes from Ashley Roberts. Can you please provide an update on the current status of CIR notices? In Durban, it seems slightly hazy as to the rate at which notifications would be sent out. Have all eligible IDEA notifications been sent out, and will subsequent notifications be sent out at a rate of 40 priority numbers per week?
Thanks for the question. This is Krista Papik again. And Christine actually, I think, touched on this a little bit earlier in her presentation. We've actually been sending CIR invitations, or notifications, excuse me, out at 100 priority numbers per week. Our goal is to fill the pipeline, as we communicated in Durban, to fill the pipeline as quickly as possible. So we're sending them out at that rate in order to do that. And we'll continue to do so until our pipeline meets or actually really exceeds capacity, and then we'll take a look at that time at the response rate, because the response rate hasn't been as high as we would have liked to have seen, and we'll be adjusting the notification process accordingly. We will, beginning next week, we will start publishing weekly updates as to what CIR notifications have gone out through which priority number, as well as where we're at with COI outreach through which priority number we've gone out for that week, as well as CIR responses and probably some other statistical information that applicants would find helpful.
Thanks, Krista. Next question also from Ashley Roberts. In Durban, it was stated that ICANN would regularly publish which priority numbers has received outreach requests to modify LOCs. Can you please confirm when this is likely to start? I have not seen any updates on the microsite.
So I think Krista just covered that, and the schedule will be posted.
Thanks, Christine. Next question is from Zodiac Holdings Limited. We have sent a request to customer service in May asking for clarification of the registry reserved name list, and I can reply that ICANN will produce and publish a uniform list for registry to use. Can ICANN give us an update and possible date for the release at the upcoming webinar?
Certainly. Thanks for the question. So the current list of reserve names can be found on the ICANN.org website. It's at www.icann.org/en/resources/registries/reserved. The list of IGO names is in the process of being posted. We can work to make sure that there's a link to the new from the new GTLD microsite to the ICANN site to make sure that that's accessible to applicants. Thanks for that.
Thanks, Christine. This next question, I believe you covered in your webinar, but I'll ask it in case there's any additional information you want to provide. It comes from Ken Stutz. Can you provide a timeline for startup auctions on contested TLDs with no back issues?
Sure. So, as I mentioned, we anticipate that the once the contention sets are finalized, we do expect that there will be some of the contention sets that are eligible for proceeding. We would expect to send those notifications out in mid-September and be prepared to begin auctions in mid-October.
Thank you. Next question comes from Ken Stepp. Where will auctions be held?
So auctions are going to be held online, so no one needs travel for auctions.
Thank you. Next question, and this is the last of the questions that, that were pre-submitted to us, comes from Ken Stepp. Has the provider for the auctions been selected?
So, yes, we are continuing to use the provider that defined, worked with us to define the auction guidelines for the AGB. That is Power Auctions, so we're going to continue to work with them to conduct the auctions.
Thanks, Christine. I'll start to go through the questions that were submitted to us in the Adobe pod. First question from Ken Stepp. When will firm guidelines for these auctions be published? And I believe you covered this in your presentation.
Yes. So we said September. Thank you.
Thanks. Next question from Ashley Roberts. What is going to happen to all those applications and contention sites that are awaiting board decisions on DAC safeguards category 1 and 2? Exclusive access. Does the whole contention set get put on hold, or does it go forward to auction?
So as long as the string or any application in a contention set is the subject of DAC advice, we would not push the entire contention set to auction. So I have a slide that listed all of the eligibility criteria, one to proceed individually for applicants to CPE, as well as collectively for the contention set to proceed to auction. So, if there are further questions from that, I'd encourage folks to submit them to the Customer Service Center.
Thanks, Christine. Next question comes from Jim Prendergast. To start CPE or auction, if the GAC gives you a non-exhaustive list, how do you know there is no GAC advice pending?
Thanks, Jim, for the question. Let me take that question offline and get back to you. I'll make sure that this is one of the questions that we address in our post-webinar Q&A document. Thank you.
Next question comes from Jacob with Big Room. Where did the no GAC advice requirement to elect CPE come from? It's not in the guidebook.
I'll do the same with that for that question. And let me take it offline, and we'll get back to you to get a complete answer. Thank you.
Next question comes from Alban Kwan. It's a question of DOI. Most applicants are Most applicants we are assisting have tried very hard to satisfy ICANN requirement on LOC. If they are unable to satisfy the requirement fully, there is likely to be a good reason why they can't. Will ICANN evaluator use the same rule of the COI outreach, or are you going to understand the applicant's difficulty and discuss with them an alternative?
Trang, you're rather the expert on these. I'll let you address this one.
Thanks, Christine. So we understand that the difficulty that applicants are having with LOCs has a lot to do with the unconditionality requirement of the instrument. And as Christine mentioned in the June 5th webinar, the conditionality of the LOCs is something that will be now reviewed as part of the contracting process and not as part of the application evaluation process. And this is going to remain true for extended evaluation. So hopefully that answers your questions. If you have any more, if that did not answer your questions or if you want more specific information, please feel free to reach out to the CSC and we'll provide you with a complete answer. Thank you. Next question comes from Brian Larson. Has the fee for community priority evaluation been set?
Brian, thank you. No, the guidebook says that it expects the CPE fee to be $10,000 approximately. We're continuing to work with the panel to finalize a fee structure for community priority evaluation. As soon as we have that done, we'll let you know. Thank you. We'll go to the phone, and I believe we have two folks online. So let's go ahead and take the first call.
Thank you. Just as a reminder, if you have a question via the phone, please press the star followed by the 1 on your touchtone phone. If you would like to withdraw your question, please press the star followed by the 2. And if you're using speaker equipment, you'll need to lift the handset before making your selection. And the first question comes from Christina Rosette from Covington. Go ahead, please.
Thanks. Hi, Christine. I have two questions. The first relates to change requests, the second relates to Sunrise. With regard to the reference on the slide that registry agreements won't be executed until the 30-day comment period is over and ICANN evaluates any comments submitted, can you provide some clarity as to what process is being used to evaluate those comments, how the community is notified that a final decision has been made on a change request?
Christine, you know, that's a good question. I know the process we get them as how we evaluate them in terms of getting the feedback on that. I don't know that that's very clear. So let me we've had maybe a handful, 5 total comments on application changes so far. We don't. It's not an exhaustive process that we do day in and day out. So let me get back to you on how we can provide clarity on that on the 30-day notice and you know that's finalized.
Sure. Perfect.
And you had a second question?
With regard on the Trademark Clearinghouse slide, it identifies the Sunrise Service live date as starting on August 9. What does that mean? Does that mean that the Clearinghouse is capable of providing Sunrise services as of that date, or that there actually is a registry that is starting its Sunrise service by virtue of the 30-day prior notice?
Fortunately,
none of the above.
it's the former, that the Sunrise service capability is operationally ready. IBM is ready to offer that service should any, as soon as a registry operator is ready to proceed to a sunrise period. We've been talking about a DAC job, not a sunrise, but I think that job is going to take advantage of the claims process. So it's intended just to be operational readiness there as soon as the first TLD is ready to take advantage of it.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Thanks.
Just another reminder, ladies and gentlemen, if you have a telephone question, please press the star followed by the one on your touchtone phone. To withdraw your question, please press the star followed by the two. And if you're using speaker equipment, you'll need to lift the handset before making your selection. And the next question comes from Yasmin Omer from Dot Shabaka. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Christine. Can you hear me?
Yes. Thank you, Yasmin. How are you?
Good. How are you? So on the trademark clearinghouse side, you mentioned that the production SMBs were issued on the 26th of July. Where were these published? Because we haven't seen them at all.
I'm sorry. Could you repeat that? The connection is a bit shaky, so I lose some of the words. Could you repeat that question?
Sure. On the trademark clearinghouse side, you mentioned that the production SMBs were issued on the 26th of July. Where were these published? Because we haven't seen them at all.
Thank you, Yasmin. I believe, let me see if Karen Lentz is online. If she is, she might be able to manage that. We're a bit shorthanded. It's August and half of our staff's on holiday too.
I'm here, Christine. Can you hear me?
Yes, thank you.
Okay. So this is Karen Lund speaking. I believe the question was about where to find the SMDs that were issued. So all of the trademark records that are in the clearinghouse database that were verified to be Sunrise eligible now have the SMDs issued associated with those records. So any users who have records should be able to access their SMDs through their user interface.
Thank you, Karen. Yasmin, did that answer your question?
Sure. My next question relates to TMCH integration testing for those who have signed the registry agreement. When will this start, and what's the process? But obviously noting it needs to be completed before we submit ETLD startup information.
So I think you're asking about integration testing with the trademark clearinghouse. And when is the question, when would that occur?
Yeah, so when and what's the process and timelines?
Karen, is that something you can address as well?
Sure, I can answer that. This is Karen Lund speaking again. So the process that we've developed for onboarding and integrating with the clearinghouse as a steady state process begins with execution of an agreement. So once the registry agreement is signed, the registry has the ability to request that access to the test environment. And similarly, registrars who have signed the 2013 RAA are also eligible for that. So that's the process that's been designed. I'll mention there's also been some interest from a number of registry service providers in possible access to do testing before a registry agreement is signed, and we are working with a provider as well to develop a process to enable that.
Okay, sorry, Karen. And where is that request made? Do we make the request directly to IBM? If so, what the details?
You can request the credentials through the CSP currently.
Okay, and that's available now?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thanks, Karen. Sorry, Christine, one more question for you.
Yes, go ahead.
So in Durban, you mentioned that you would be publishing a sample request for exemption to the Code of Conduct that would be submitted with the CIR, so much in the same way that you provided a sample declaration of cross-ownership interests. Is that, as far as I know, that's yet to be published. Is that still going to be published, and if so, when?
Thank you, Yasmin. I'm going to ask Krista to address that one.
Hi, Yasmin. This is Krista. Thanks for the question. So the Code of Conduct exemption request and the accompanying template for requesting a Code of Conduct exemption is still in final review here at ICANN. I expect to be able to post that very soon, hopefully by the end of next week is the goal.
Thank you, Yasmin, for your questions. I appreciate it. I think we have one more on the phone.
Thanks.
Yes, thank you. And the next question comes from Brett Fawcett from Yoon Registry. Go ahead, please.
Thank you, Christine. I had a question about the 20% of the TLDs in the uncategorized category of this week's name collision report, and wondered whether the 3 to 6 month likely delay on studying the impact of those was going to impact how ICANN handled contention resolution, specifically the ICANN auctions that will go forward this fall. Are those TLDs delayed for auction purposes, or are they proceeding on the path that you outlined? Thanks.
Brett, thank you for that question. This is still such a fresh topic. The entire approach is out to public comment, so we need to work through how this is going to impact some of the downstream processes. So let me take that offline and let the team work on that issue over the next several days, and we will include that in our Q&A document. But it's a very valid question. Thank you.
Thank you.
Did you have anything else, Brett?
There are no further questions at this time. Thank you.
Okay, we'll read some more questions from the pod then. Next question comes from Tim Switzer. Christine, there's the ICANN's collision report of second tensions that's entering into the ICANN auction process, which we'll get back to you, Tim, offline. Next question is from Ruben. Considering most of the contention sets are listed in the SSR report as uncalculated risks, should an auction for those contention sets be postponed while the risk level is determined by further studies? Yes, Rubens, we'll get back to you on that one as well. Next question from Ashley Roberts. You mentioned that for last resort auctions, an applicant can request a one-time extension. How long of an extension can they request and or will be allowed?
So, as per the AGB, I don't have it open in front of me. I recollect that it was a 90-day extension they could ask for if all of the applicants in the contention set agree, but we can confirm that, and if it's otherwise, we'll include that in our Q&A as well.
Thanks, Christine. And the next question, John Stahl from .music LLC, your question was truncated in the Adobe pod, so if you'd like to resubmit that, we'll go ahead and read your question. I'm going to move on and read a question from Peter Green. In Durban, ICANN announced that the process for applicants to apply for exemption from the Code of Conduct has been developed when this process completed, and I believe Krista had covered that a few minutes ago. Next question is from Stephanie Duchesneau. Can an applicant with a draw lower than 400 rest assured that if they have not received a COI outreach notice to date, there are no outstanding issues with their COI, or are there other eligibility criteria that may affect the timing of COI outreach?
Hi, Stephanie. It's Krista Papik. Generally speaking, yes. Applicants who have a priority draw number less than 400, who have not received COI outreach, On our review, the COI was determined to be compliant with Specification 8. Depending on when they receive their invitation to contracting, there could be factors that change. For instance, their bank rating drops or something else comes up. But at the time that we evaluated the COI, which for this particular, if it's below priority 400 for this particular example, that would have been recently. At that time, it was determined that the COI was compliant.
Thanks, Krista. There's a follow-up question from Stephanie. Are there any limits? Are there any limits on the time that applicants are given to respond to COI outreach notifications?
Hi, Stephanie. Thanks again. Krista, again, there is no time limit as to when you can respond, or you're not even required to respond to the COI outreach. It's really more of a customer service initiative on our part to try and be helpful to applicants in advance of being invited to contracting. Just as an FYI, for informational purposes, the COI outreach is being conducted through the customer portal. It's initiated through our case management system, and we're leaving those outreach cases open for 30 days. And then at the end of those 30 days, if we haven't heard anything, we will let the applicant know that we're going to close out the case. Doesn't mean that they can't contact us later than that, 60, 90, 120 days later with questions. It's really more just a way of sort of keeping our systems from being too bogged up with cases that aren't being worked on. But there is no limit as to when you can respond to COI outreach or if there's even a requirement to do so.
Thanks, Krista. Our next question is from Leanne. Will ICANN be providing a template for their code of conduct exemption request, and if so, when? I think you covered that earlier. Thanks. Next question from Stephanie. In terms of eligibility for CPE and auction, what bar is being used to determine whether an application is subjected to GAC advice? Must it be specifically referenced on the Bayesian communique, or are potential Category 1 and Category 2 strings that are not specifically listed held up by GAC advice?
So we had a similar question a few minutes ago. So let me follow up and take that offline in terms of GAC advice. Thank you.
Interesting. Next question from Vietnam. In the context of the name collision report, can applicants obtain the underlying data ASAP in order to perform their own analysis for their respective TOD string? This could involve at least data where the TOD string appears as a top-level DNS query, and at least those TOD strings that were placed into the uncalculated risk category. It may also involve the information whether there were wildcard internal X.509 name certificates on the top level.
So thanks for the question, Werner. It's massive amounts of data, as I understand it. So I can't imagine how that would be possible. But let me take that on our list of questions to follow up. It would be data that the third-party firm collected and used. So I don't know that it's something we could provide. But let me take that offline, and I'll follow up. Thank you.
Thanks, Christine. Next question comes from Peter Green. Could you provide some updated statistics about TMCH records?
You know what, Peter, I actually don't have any updated statistics. Let me look through my notes here. Unless there's anything Karen Lentz would like to chime in, I don't have any updated statistics on the number of strains, a number of marks registered, et cetera.
Hi, Christine. This is Karen. Since the update we gave in Durban, I don't think we have had any updates since then, but we can also provide that in the written responses.
Thanks, Karen.
Next question from Michael Fleming. This has been already stated in a number of times. However, just for clarification purposes, would you please repeat the answer? Currently, CIRs are being sent out based on priority number. For example, if application priority number 50 receives a CIR before application priority number 300, however, priority number 300 replies to the CIR before application priority number 50, then application priority number 300 will be put in line for delegation before application priority number 50, correct? However, if application priority number 50 replies back to its CIR before application priority number 300 delegates, application priority number 50 would be put back in line for delegation before application priority number 300, correct?
So there's a lot of, assumptions and questions there, and I think we've got a couple of flawed understandings. So in general, yes, it's certainly possible for an application with a higher priority number, like priority number 300, to respond to the CIR before priority number 50. We're clearly seeing that not all of the first 50 invitees have responded to their CIRs. So it's certainly possible. What I'd like to remind everyone is that there are multiple cycles of processing between being invited to contracting and delegation. So the first being processing of your CIR response and moving towards contracting. So once they respond, although application number 300 might be in the queue for contracting, if they should go towards down a negotiation path, that could affect their timeline. Even if application number 300 is contracted in week 4 and application 50 is contracted in week 5, what that would affect and mean is that application 300 would have 1 week advance opportunity to move towards electing a pre-delegation testing date. Again, there's a pre-delegation testing cycle. Depending on the timeline for each applicant to proceed through pre-delegation testing, there's an impact there. And then as we move out of pre-delegation testing and delegate to IANA, again, it's another cycle. Most of our processes are weekly batches. We look at the output from one phase of work in week one. Is an input to the next cycle of work in week two, and so on and so on. So it is not just who responds to their CIR first. That's not necessarily the order of delegation. That does not dictate the order of delegation. I hope I've added a little bit of color perspective on our processing cycle there. Thank you.
Thank you, Christine. This question comes from Lucas Well. Can you provide a link for the RPM's requirements that were published on August 6th? Currently in the, and he provides a link to the Trademark Clearinghouse webpage, we have only this draft RPM requirements, which is dated April 6th.
So, sure. It is, actually there's a link right on the ICANN.org homepage. There's a recent announcement for the RPM document, requirements document being posted. But we can also include a link in our Q&A document post-webinar. Thank you.
Thanks, Christine. Next question comes from Brad Fawcett. What is the option schedule for the 20% of the TRDs in the uncategorized category of this week's NIM collision report? There's that 3 to 6 month delay impact when they would go to auction.
Yeah, I think that's the question Brett asked on the phone. So we'll take that offline.
Thank you. Next question comes from Christina Rosette. Is ICANN aware that under some circumstances, ICC panelists are paid a €620 per diem? Will ICANN work with parties to ICC proceedings to ensure that parties will receive itemized statements?
Christine, let me look into that situation, and I'll get back to you with a response on how we'll handle that. Thank you.
Our next question from Donna Austin. Can a registry operator delegate and use the 100 promotional domain name in Spec 5 of the registry agreement prior to Sunrise?
Christine,
do you want me to answer that?
Oh, great, Karen. Sure. Thank you.
So, Donna, in the draft RPM requirements document that was just posted for comment, there is a provision that is out for comment, which does enable the 100 names in the registry agreement to be used before, during the Sunrise, in line with the parameters that are discussed there. So that's out for comment now.
Thank you, Karen. Do we have any callers online? No callers online. So I think we've just got a handful more questions in the pod. We're just, if anything is duplicative, we will skip that, and we'll just make sure that all of the questions are handled in the Q&A document. Anything else, Trent?
I just have one more from Jim Prendergast. So on that somewhat complicated cycle and priority question that you had just answered, there is a priority number always from response time.
Priority number does not trump at response time. Meaning responding to the CIR request. I'll let Chris to address this one.
Hi, Jim. It's Krista Papik. So with respect to contracting, no, we lead with priority number. However, response, we process the responses in the order that we receive them to get them through the pipeline as quickly as possible, as efficiently as possible. Response time, for what it's worth, response time, days or minutes or hours is probably not going to have any impact on how quickly your contracts get turned around. Multiple days, weeks, months, obviously will make a difference. But we do process contracting information requests in the order that they come back in.
And Jim, this is Christine Millette. I would just add to that we do honor and respect the priority number in each phase and each cycle of processing. So we are honoring the priority number as we initiate the CIR requests because we cannot control the responses. And based on priority number, we are handling them in response order. But in the future phases, as there are applications eligible for requesting a PDP date, we would again revert to honoring that week's invitees into PDP based on priority number. Again, the future phases of the program will continue to consider priority number. So, I think that concludes our questions that have come into the chat pod. Thank you all for participating. I hope that this time was more optimal for those of you in Asia and Australia. And thank you for participating very much. If, as always, if you have other questions, the customer...